The Stardust Radio Network, where talent and technology meet.
Now, if you always wanted to know the truth about things like UFOs, underground bases, Area 51, the Great Pyramid at Giza, and the Roswell incident of 1947, if so, look no further than Dennis Ballfaser's cutting-edge research. There's no woo-woo factor here, folks, just the facts as he researched them. Dennis's lectures are available on video and audio cassette. For more information and free access to Dennis's research, visit his website, www.truthseekeratroswell.com. That's truthseekeratroswell.com. The truth is here.
And now live from Riverside, Iowa, the future birthplace of Captain James T. Kirk of the USS Enterprise. Another episode of Wake Up USA, a UFO study. Your host this evening, Joe Montaldo.
Good evening and welcome to another episode of Wake Up USO, UFO, a UFO study. Sorry, y'all. Just getting tired. How is everyone tonight? I hope everybody's doing okay. Everything's going good. There's been a lot of interesting things going on this week. A lot of interesting news running all over the place that I really wanted to catch up on tonight. First off, a friend of ours, who I speak to on a regular basis, sent me this link today about Northrop Grumman and Boeing getting together and going to work for NASA. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I had to mention this because this is really a significant step in the space program. We've been hoping for years that private industries would get together and work for a place in space. Well, that's what Northrop Grumman and Boeing do. Northrop's going to take the lead on the project, at least for the first year. Let's see where it goes. But they're really going to work on getting us into space. They're looking for a new research. Basically, it's a research vehicle, research lander, but it carries people. Guys, I have to tell you, it was a really significant thing to see. I was really, really happy to see this. I just can't even express that. It was one of the things. I know a lot of people are going to be against it because it is two very large companies getting together and working with the government, with NASA, on a project. But the thing about it is, we know Northrop Grumman and Boeing's been working with the government and for the Air Force and different parts of the government for years, and along with private industry. So it is a good step. It's making a step in the right direction because these guys are going to want to make a profit. So they're going to make this a profit feasible idea. It's not going to just cost us money. Eventually, it'll support itself. So that's a good thing, guys. I mean, it's something I was really looking forward to seeing, and it happened. So now I'm happy. We'll just have to wait and see where it goes. Some stuff on Mars this week. There were some photos taken, it was about 2 months ago, they just made it to the internet. I had seen a couple of them yesterday and a couple of them today, of a couple of different valleys on Mars. Now, what you can see in these photos are, most of them you can tell it's like an old dried up riverbed. No big deal nowadays, you know, we know there was water on Mars and that, you know, there's probably water on Mars today, but these were old dried up riverbeds. Now, there are two photos where these riverbeds show a very green on the bottom. They're very green on the bottom. This is the fifth picture in 4 months where I've seen in a mountainous terrain or in a valley terrain this greenness. I'm just curious to know what this is. You know, NASA won't give any explanation for it whatsoever. They just say it's an anomaly. They don't know what it is. And I'm just curious. I mean, any thoughts, any ideas, send them to www.icar1.com. And we can do it that way. It's one of those things I definitely wanted to check into. If anybody else has any information on it, I would like to get some more information on it. But there's been four photos released in the last 2 months. Altogether, I think there's been about 10 of them released, not including some of the older telescope photos of green regions on Mars. But, you know, like I said, maybe some kind of weird rock formation or some kind of colored stone. We just can't tell. We're not close enough to it. But I would really like to get some feedback on it. I do find it interesting. Some people do seem to think it is some type of life, maybe a fungus, maybe a grass, maybe a weed. No one really knows, but I'm just curious. I'd like to get some feedback on it. Also, I was reading today, too, one of the researchers sent me this article on Titan. I don't know if y'all have read this or not. I found this very interesting. Titan basically has everything it needs to sustain life, or to create life. I'm sorry, not to sustain life, but to create life. It has all the molecules. Basically, it was like Earth was a very long time ago, except the difference is there, it's very cold, and there's not much sunlight. What they're saying is these cells will be slowed. Basically, a cell development will take thousands of years, thousands of more years there than it would have here, because of the difference in climate. But they do think they're going to find life on Titan, guys. I just wanted you to know that. I've actually read that in three different articles now, so We think we're going to find life on Mars. Now we're saying we might find it on Titan. It's making the solar system a very interesting place, and it's making the chance for life throughout the galaxy so much higher. And it's something that we really need to keep tab on, we need to keep track of, we need to really keep a watch on all these different things that are going on. Make the government answer for these things, you know, the agencies that are in charge, make them, you know, say, hey, look, guys, I'm not buying this answer, what really is this? Come on, give us a clue, what's happening here? So, you know, we have to keep them to the grind on those things. Also, while I'm on that particular subject, I hope everybody comes and joins us at the X Conference this year. It's in April. Why don't you come join Stephen Bessette? Wake Up USA will be there as the press for the X Conference. Why don't you come on down and chit-chat with us? We'll be doing interviews there. We'll be doing live interviews as well. So I'm inviting everyone to come see us. It should be a lot of fun. Most of y'all have heard Stephen before. He's a very interesting speaker. There's going to be a lot of other good guests there. So I'm hoping that, you know, a bunch of y'all will come down and see us. I'd like to meet a lot of these people who listen to the show, so just stop by and say hi. We're real easy, you know, we're real open. You can just walk right up to us and talk to us. It's not a big deal, just say hi. And if you had an experience or contact and you live in that general area, it's a good time to get in touch with us or one of the researchers. Just something I thought I would mention. Now, getting back to Mars, there's one other thing I wanted to mention about Mars, is there were some more pictures taken of those tube-looking things. I don't want to call them glass because everyone calls them glass tubes. They're clear. What they're made out of, nobody has a clue. But the recent photos suggest these things are very large. We had a good idea that they were fairly large because these were, you know, aerial shots taken from above. They're orbital shots. So we knew these tubes were fairly large to be seen, but one of the recent shots suggests that these things are 80 to 100 meters around. This is very large, guys. I mean... I don't know what they were being used for, but it doesn't seem like something that's just naturally occurring or just randomly popping up around the planet. There seems to be a method to this madness, and there does seem to be some sort of pattern to all of this. What it is, I don't know, but it does seem one that there does seem to be one emerging. So it is something I want everyone to keep apprised of and keep aware of. Just, you know, you can view these photos. Bottom line is you can see these photos anyway. Off a NASA site, off a JPL site. You can either go download the raw images and analyze them yourself on your own computer if you like to. I believe JPL even supplies the software to help go through some of these photos. They actually encourage you to pick these photos up and look through them because they said there's just too many of them for them to go through every day. So that's why we get lucky every now and then and get one of those strange anomalies. I know Arthur C. Clarke's people, not Arthur C. Clarke, and I believe he passed away, but a lot of the people and groups that work for him actually do this on a regular basis. We do get a lot of information from them. So I find that to be interesting as well. But there's a lot of good stuff going on. There's a lot of stuff to be keeping up on in our own things besides just the UFOs working all over the place. You know, just this week alone, I mean, just on Philophiles, there is probably 40 or 50 sightings. If you took all the organizations that have been actually reported to this week, probably around 400 or 500 sightings just in the U.S. alone. Now, the skies are very busy. Now, probably, you know, maybe 50%, not even that, probably about 10% of those sightings are even worth investigating, but still, that's still a nice round number of 50. So you had 50 legitimate sightings this week, at least 50 sightings that are worth checking into. So if you start times it out across, you know, a year and then across each nation on the U.S., that adds up to be a lot of visitations. ET seems to be very, 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 very busy. I'm not sure what they're doing, but they do seem to be very busy. But the different sightings around the country are interesting. But, you know, it's one of the things is if you really want to get an idea about the hotspots around the United States or any country that you may live in, find the agency that, you know, find a couple of agencies, reporting agencies in your different countries. Go through them and just simply see where the sightings are happening in each week. You can actually start to see a pattern after that. It's one of them things you might want to just keep up. You know, because you can work it out just like that, just by seeing a pattern. You can just go see where they're going to be, and it'll give you a much better chance of actually maybe catching one on tape or seeing one up close. We know, like in the United States, places like California, especially in San Diego, or even Sonora or Northern California, seems to be very hot for some reason this year. Pretty much all of Florida. On either coast, if you're willing to sit out a couple of nights, you're usually going to see something. It's interesting. The Great Lakes states seem to be hot this time of year. So I don't know. It's one of those things you can get out and check, try to get an understanding, try to get it, you know, bring your camera, see what you can find, get me some pictures. The more photos you get, the better off we are. Now, you know, we'll post them to the internet, put them on the websites where everybody can view them and see them. Maybe we'll actually see what's going on. I got to tell y'all, guys, it's definitely an interesting development going on around. Now, oh, wait, there's something else I wanted to talk about as well. There's been a group of sightings, trying to remember the name, I believe it's in Queensland, Australia, that I'm very interested in. Basically, there was two elongated saucer sightings on three different nights in three different locations. Now, on two of the nights, they have witnesses reporting seeing humans going in and out of these ships. Now, the reason I find this interesting is because most ufologists attribute those type of craft to the reptilians, not to the humans. It's kind of an interesting thing, and I'm trying to get, you know, some people who else might have seen or at least may have seen the ships or may have known some of the people who were contacted. So I'm not sure what's going on with that, but guys, it is something we really have to keep track of, keep a note of, see what's going on, try to understand this stuff. Keep it, but every time, always keep track of your local area, you know. Just keep a good track of your local area, see what's going on. Read your newspaper. You'll be surprised. They actually pop up in your newspaper from time to time. But if you can find something, say, within 100 miles of your house or 200 miles of your house, it's driving range. You can get in your car and say, okay, look, honey, we know that these UFOs have been showing up in this particular area for several nights now. Let's take the camcorder and the camera and the kids and the dog and take a ride out and see what we can see, see what's going on, and maybe get lucky, get a photograph, get a picture. You know, guys, maybe get some tape, even some audio tape. You never know. You might just get lucky. I have to be honest with you, though, ladies and gentlemen. I take my camcorder everywhere I go. And the thing about it is 90% of the time when I see something good, I never have my camcorder within reach. It's always with me, but it's never within reach. And it seems like if it's sitting there in my lap all day or sitting on my shoulder all day or sitting on my front seat all day, I don't see something. And, you know, it's probably just in my mind, but it makes me crazy. It really does, because we do a lot of driving and we spend a lot of time in different areas setting up, and you just don't see much on tape. I mean, we have got a few things on videotape, but really and truly, we don't get that much. Now, for some reason or another, 35mm cameras seem to work really well for this. Digital cameras do as well. It's just we're kind of leery about digital for the simple fact that it's easily faked. So we're very kind of skeptical about digital film, but it does work really well. 35mm is a lot harder to hoax. You'd have to physically hoax that. Going in and changing the film or something on the film would be way too easy to recognize, so it's not something that we're going to do. But, you know, bottom line is you know, try to use your digital cameras as least possible. We always tell everybody to buy just one of them cheap $7, $8 cameras, one of them store cameras to see what's going on. You know, just $7, $8 camera with a flash. They seem to work really good. We get lots of photographs from them. That way you also know that the camera wasn't opened until it's giving to the person, the individual, to have the film develop. So it makes the film a lot more credible is what it does. And if for some reason, it shows up on 35 and it doesn't show up on videotape. If anyone's got an explanation for that, I'm really willing to see or to listen, but I have not seen one. A good explanation for anywhere at all. So, but it is something we tell everybody to be aware of. It does seem to be easier to get them on 35mm than it does on anything else. So keep your fingers crossed. Maybe you'll get lucky. Maybe you'll get a photograph. Maybe you'll get something interesting out there. Nice piece of video, something like that. I don't know. It's one of them things that I really just like to preach about a lot. I know I harp on this a lot, but keeping the right equipment with you really makes a difference in what you're going to get and how credible you're going to be considered after you get it. And that, myself, is, I have to tell you, is very, very important. Now, a couple other things that I wanted to go over. You know, we were talking about Titan. And I know we're skipping around, but going back to Titan, I really wanted to discuss this a little bit more for a couple of reasons. One of it is, it does have cloud cover. It does have its own internal heat. Now, granted, it's not warm and cozy like it is on Earth, but it does have it. It's a very cold place in general, but it does have liquid water, or what at least they think is liquid water. It also seems they have most of the molecules needed to create life. So far, they found everything that would be on planet Earth at the time of creation. So they are really hoping to find some type of microbial life here. They're not expecting to find anything of any consequence, just, you know, microbes. But it is something that they were trying to find. But also, while we're thinking about this, let's say this. Let's use Titan as an example. You have Titan and Mars, both of which we think we're going to find life on. Now, Venus probably won't be simply too hot, but there may have been life on Venus at one time. We may find life on one or two other moonlets, or maybe even more than that, in our solar system. Now, there's roughly about 100 planetoids in our solar system. And the thing about it is, if we're finding life here 5 or 6 times out of our own solar system, and we know that there's 200 billion stars in our galaxy, how much life do y'all think is out there? I mean, really, I mean, if we can find it 5 times in our own solar system, how much life do y'all think is out there? I mean, it's one of those things that is actually kind of mind-boggling. I'm just curious to see what everybody thinks about that. But it's just a thought, something to think about. I don't know how to express it, guys. It is something I want y'all to think about, though, because after this, with what we found locally in our own solar system, the new equations for the Drake equation, some things that science have just recently learned about planets without stars, maybe being able to handle life, then it really brings the possibility of life way, way, way up. I mean, way, way up, to a point where it's just almost a staggering amount. You're probably looking at 1 billion, maybe 2 billion planets with life on them, at least half of those with intelligent life. Guys, I don't know. It sounds like the galaxy is a very crowded place. I don't exactly know what's going on with that. But it is something we need to be apprised of and keep aware of, because it makes a difference in what we think. It really, truly is. It's something I want everybody to be aware of, something to know what's going on. Oh, man. Well, what was that? Oh, got a question coming in here. I don't know what that's about. So, you know, now we got Titan out of the way, we got Mars out of the way. Now, let me ask y'all something, ladies and gentlemen. Would you go to Mars? Would you really? I'm just curious. Would you actually just hop on a spaceship and go to Mars and take off? I'm kind of curious to see if anybody would do that. I would. I would go hang out on Mars for a while and see what's going on. I'm just curious, you know, who else would go? I would love to go. I would just, you know, I would just be like just amazed and dazed that someone would even ask me to go. It's something that I would really enjoy doing. I would hop on a spaceship and go. Now the question is, would you go if this was a one-way ticket? That's the true question. Would you go if this is a one-way ticket? That's what I'm curious in. I'm just curious. I mean, you know, you can call us in and tell us. This is a discussion I've been wanting to go over for a while. The pros and cons of actually colonizing and moving to Mars. And would you go if it was a one-way ticket? Now, I would still go. I would. I mean, I'd have to discuss it with my wife and my son, but I would probably still go. I'd have to say, well, it's an opportunity that it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. So, what are you going to do? Being a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, you're just going to have to go. So I don't know, guys. I would definitely sign on and say, take me there. Now, I don't know what I do when I got there. I'm a general contractor, and I do know computers and network. But it is something that we need to do, and something that we want to do, at least most of us. We are explorers. I mean, we're all U.S. most U.S. citizens, and most of the people listening to my voice are explorers. So, you know, I mean, to me, it's just a new adventure. It's a new challenge. It's a new place to go. And I would just like to get out there and take care of things and do it. I mean, I would just like to get out there and do it. Now, being one way or not, I would still have to go. I mean, I would actually still have to go being a one-way ticket. But I know some of y'all would not want to. I know it'd be kind of rough on some of y'all. But, you know, somebody's got to do it. Somebody's actually got to get out there and do it and see what's going on. And I think I'd be one of the ones. Now, I see there's a lot of people here visiting. I know we got a lot of people listening on the radio side, and I know we got a lot of people in general hanging out with us and talking with us tonight. And anyway, it's one of them things that, guys, you know, I just wanted to ask. I'm curious to how many of y'all would go and how many of y'all wouldn't go, and how many of y'all would stay and things along those lines. I was just reading something that Jeff had said. I don't know, we're having problems with the guest phone number tonight, ladies and gentlemen. I don't know what that is. They give us a phone number and then they disappear. I guess maybe they just forgot they were doing the show tonight. Who knows, guys? It's one of those crazy things. So we're just going to talk about whatever we feel like tonight. I'm thinking, you know, maybe we should either talk about colonization or maybe agendas. What is E.T. doing here? Why is E.T. here? What's up with E.T.? You know, that's what I'm curious about. What's up with E.T.? Why would they want to come mess with us? I'm not even sure. I'm not even sure why they would even want to come visit us. I mean, y'all tell me, what's noteworthy about planet Earth? Nothing? That's me. I said that. Actually, I know there's a lot of good things about our planet, and I actually would love living here, so even though I would go to Mars. I know I did say that earlier, but I would go to Mars. But not because I don't love Earth. It's just because I would like a new challenge and a new adventure. But what would drive E.T. to come here? And first off, what would drive E.T. to come here, but not only come here, but forcibly take people and create experiments and do things with them as well? You know, that's always something that makes me crazy, and it's something I really work on a regular basis. But, you know, why? Why would they actually want to come here and bug us? Why would they want to come sit here? I mean, what is it that we possess that's even worth taking the time to deal with? What is it? I mean, there has to be something that they're interested in. Is it us personally? Is it our emotions? Is it our spirit? Is it what the planet has? It's one of those things that we're asking questions about and trying to understand and trying to figure out, and I don't know. It's one of those things that I want some answers to. Why would E.T. actually be coming here? You know, it's one of them things that I'm just curious to find out. Why would they want to even be a little bit interested in us? Why would they want to come abduct someone like, say, aliens or us, or instant karma? Why would they come get these people? Why would they just say, okay, zap them. Now, let's barbecue them. Why couldn't they just scan us and find out all the information they want? Why do they have to physically take people? Now, I'm not saying that all abductions or all contacts are bad things. Please don't take this out of context, because that's not what I'm saying. Some abductions are bad. It's irrelevant. Some contacts are unpleasant. Some are not. Let's just do it like that, because putting good or bad or evil in this is a bad way to go. So the thing about it is we know some contacts were unpleasant. Some contacts are not very unpleasant. So, and some of them, for some people, seem to be something they want to do and they want to understand and they want to relish. So now we have three different types of contacts from at least four different types of aliens. So what's the interest? What's the fascination with us? We admit as a race that we're very young. We have only a very limited amount of knowledge, a finite amount. We've just barely started to learn anything. So what is it? It can't be our intelligence. Some people say it's our emotions. I don't think so, because some of the aliens I've heard described have emotions. So I don't think that's what it is. It's not our longevity. They seem to outlive us, so that's not what it is. We could say it was the planet Earth or minerals found on planet Earth, but I doubt that there's any minerals on this planet that you simply couldn't find somewhere else. So, I'm curious. What's the driving point? There has to be a driving point. There has to be a reason why these ETs would have wanted to come in the first place. And when they came here, were we here? Are we something after the fact, after they came here? Did they come here before man actually walked on this planet? That's well within the realm of possibility. We could be one of their creations. Or we could be a combination of things. So, it really comes down to, and if they were here then, before us, why did they create us? Why didn't they create their own selves? images of their own self. Why didn't they create androids or robots? Why man? It's things that really need, you know, questions that need to be answered. And I mean, we work at it every day. We talk to abductees every day and contactees every day, and we do a lot of research and we read a lot of books. But it's questions that need to be answered. Why would ET want to be here? Why would they have came here 10,000, 100,000, a million years ago? And if they were here before us, why did they come here before man was here? And then why did they create us? And if they didn't create us and we were here, why did they interfere with us? Why did they intervene with us, manipulate us, change us, abduct us? Why would they want to do these? You know, these are all questions that it's one of the things that we work on every day. Is this something we work on a regular basis and a regular day? And I like to ask questions and see if anybody else knows the answers. Hey, Neil, I hear you with us, man. Can you hear me?
Oh, good evening, Joe. Neil here.
Yeah, sorry. I was just talking, and Jeff informed me that you were in the queue. And I was just chit-chatting. We were talking about abductions and why are ETs bugging us. Everybody, ladies and gentlemen, Neil Freer. Hi, and I just wanted to introduce you. Did I pronounce your last name correctly?
I'm sorry, your voice is
kind of
breaking up.
Oh, I'm sorry about that. It's kind of weird. Must be a little static in the atmosphere tonight. I was just asking if I had pronounced your name correctly. I had said Neil Freer, and I just wanted to make sure I was pronouncing it correctly.
You're right on. Thank you.
Okay, I just, you know, well, I hate to bot somebody's name all night long. I'm going to be using it. Oh, you want to do me a favor and just tell our listening audience a little bit about yourself, let them get a feel about who and what you are and what got you involved in this, and we'll start from there.
Okay. which was called Breaking the God Spell, and that focused on the ramifications of the amazing Nobel Prize work, the ramifications of the thesis of Zechariah Sitchin, who hopefully many of the audience will know or at least read his works, which says that the transcultural gods known to all the ancient civilizations, to the Sumerians as the Anunnaki, meaning those who came down from the heavens, were not mythological beings, as Joe Campbell would have it, or the classical mythologist, but they were real humanoid aliens from the 10th planet in our solar system, which subsequently we have discovered with the Iris satellite in 8384, and I think we've been tracking ever since, their home planet, and they came here 432,000 years ago, splashed down in the Persian Gulf, colonized the planet. We're here to take huge quantities of gold out. We're on Mars also, and they eventually created us as a slave species to take their place in their gold mines in South Africa, which we've really discovered. There's gold mines in South Africa that the mining community down there has discovered 100,000 years old, with traces of human habitation and work in them. And so here we are, a genetically engineered species across between Homo erectus.
Neil, let me stop you right there for a minute, sir. Don't lose your place.
Got it.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be taking a short break, so I want you to please stay tuned to Wake Up USA, a UFO study. I'm your host, Joe Montalto. We'll be returning with our guest, Neil Faria, right after the break to take some questions from our virtual audience, so please stay tuned.
Have you always wanted to know the truth about things like UFOs, underground bases, Area 51, the Great Pyramid at Giza, and the Roswell incident of 1947? If so, look no further than Dennis Ballfaser's cutting-edge research. There's no woo-woo factor here, folks, just the facts as he researched them. Dennis's lectures are available on video and audio cassette. For more information and free access to Dennis's research, visit his website, www.truthseekeratroswell.com. That's truthseekeratroswell.com. The truth is here.
I'm William Shatner, and this is Jimmy. Animals like Jimmy are often left behind by people fleeing hurricanes, fires, floods, and earthquakes. These abandoned animals cannot survive on their own. If you must evacuate your home, please never leave an animal behind. If you absolutely cannot take your animal with you, never leave him helplessly chained or caged. Many animals die because they cannot escape fires or rising waters. Animals need your help. Thank you.
Call PETA today, 757-622-PETA.
You're listening to the Stardust Radio Network, www.stardustradio.com, where technology and talent meet. You're listening to Wake Up USA, a UFO study on Pal Talk Radio. Download Pal Talk today at www.paltalk.com and stay tuned for more programming on Pal Talk Radio, www.paltalkradio.com.
Good evening and welcome back to Wake Up USA, a UFO study. Sorry for y'all having to listen to me babble for 30 minutes earlier tonight, but we're sitting here talking with Neil Faria. Now, Neil, I heard you just before the break, you were talking about the Anunnaki and slavery, so I want you just to pick up from right there, man.
Okay. The first book I wrote was in called Breaking the God Spell in 1987, and as I was saying before, it works out the ramifications of the thesis of Zechariah Sitchin that I was outlining, and the major thesis of Breaking the God Spell is that it is clear now that the major religions of the world that we know are basically sublimations, continuations of the ancient master-slave relationship that we were created under, and we have subsequently cosmified and infinitized those humanoid gods, particularly one of them in the Judeo-Christian tradition, which was Enlil, one of two brothers, Enlil and Enki. Enki was the scientist who invented us genetically 200,000 years ago and also instituted the Grail bloodline of kings that Lawrence Gardner has just recently published about four or five books on, popularized in the fiction novel Da Vinci Code. But check out Sir Lawrence's website at Grail, www.grail.co.uk. aliens all the way down the line here. I published God Games, which works out the further ramifications of that kind of what I've called genetic enlightenment. We can restore our true history to ourselves. We can become generic humans instead of sectarian humans. We can see that the creationist evolutionist paradigm is conflict, is an invalid paradigm at this particular point. That the conflict there shows that both are half right and half wrong. There was a creation, but it was in a genetic engineering laboratory. That's how we came about. The evolutionists are correct. We're going through an evolutionary process, but I have deemed it well to reinvent another word, real evolution, because we're not. It's not just a simple Darwinian thing, because as a synthetic species, a genetically engineered species, we don't fit the Darwinian paradigm at all of survival of the fittest or any of that stuff. So we can bypass all that. We can move beyond religion, we can beyond the old new age, and become generic humans. Each individual can become his own evolutionary artist, and we need now, soon, to become our own individual exopoliticians. Exopolitics meaning the interrelationship or the relationships politically, sociobiologically, or whatever, between us and other human species. And we can look forward now to matriculating into space. But that brings up the major focus that I'm working on in a third book called Sapiens Rising. You can see preliminary stuff on it on my website, which is www.neilfreer.com. I've done any number of presentations. I've done over 200 interviews on this topic since 1987. One of the most fascinating presentations I gave just recently was at a think tank in Washington. I was invited to present this stuff. I went out at full bore to an audience of about 30 Pentagon brass, and I didn't know what to think, quite honestly. And it turned out that they sat there through a PowerPoint two-hour presentation with excellent attention and respect, and I was amazed that they stayed another hour to ask highly intelligent and very keen questions, as if they knew a lot of this stuff. But of course, these people are intelligence people, and what you get from them is stone face. I mean, you give them as much information as you can, they don't give you anything back. You know. And that was quite an experience for me, and it gave me some hope, you know, that at least among the younger ones, that certainly military intelligence is, frankly, I thought before, is not like the mother of oxymorons. So right now, my major focus in Sapiens Rising is to delineate, to show how the alien topic in our minds has to be expanded. It has to be seen in two parts. It has to be seen in the intra-solar system relationship, inside the solar system relationship that we have with the Anunnaki aliens. We're half alien. We need to get ready to matriculate into stellar society. We're being blocked by religion. We're being blocked by politicians whose power is threatened. We're being blocked by academia, who's basically, you know, they're influenced by tenure tetanus, if you will. And science, of course, is funding fright. If they can't get funding, they just won't deal with something. So all those things are major blockages as far as both the intrasolar system politics, exopolitics, if you will, and the exo-solar system politics of all of the species that we know and suddenly he gets picked up in the middle of the night, and he spends a weekend on a spaceship. One of the major things that they taught him was that you don't go into space with weapons. You go into space peacefully, or you don't go. Now, other races and so on, these were the burdens they call themselves. They've been traveling the universe looking for species for a long, long time. Now, we also have the word of remote viewers, who are, trained, highly trained, and very good remote viewers who have made contact with aliens, who have told us that we were created for the wrong reason. And that refocuses on the Anunnaki, because it's possible, and I think this is something that was in that packet of information that was given to me when I was 12. The Anunnaki have a problem of being accepted into stellar society because they invented us for less than good reasons. They invented us as a slave species, always kept us in submission, which comes up through Enlil, who is Jehovah Yahweh, that tradition, in our history. He wanted us to stay slaves and forget about it. Enki wanted us, was more benevolent, his brother who invented us. And so you can trace the conservative, fundamentalist vein of thought tradition all the way back to at least Enki, to Enlil, and the more liberal humanistic tendencies, especially in Western culture and in Eastern culture, to Enki. Again, I want to say that I think we need to see this in the overall picture, because if we don't reconcile with the Anunnaki, people say, well, they were badass and they might want to put us back to work in the gold mine. It's inevitable. They're on that planet, the test planet of our solar system, which we know is there. Ben Flandern and Harrington Sitchin has gone to actually, there's a videotape, excellent, called We Are Not Alone, in which there is a segment where Harrington and Sitchin sit down in Harrington's office. Harrington, at that time, is dead now, unfortunately, and I won't go into that. But the meeting that they had in Harrington's office when he was the head of the Naval Observatory, where they were drawing the same pictures of the solar system, Harrington even was saying, you've got more information about this planet that we know is there than we do at this particular point from the old records. He even went so far as to say on videotape, it's a probably, a pretty nice planet with an atmosphere, and we could even survive there. That pretty much blew me away. But at any rate, we need to reconcile with the Anunnaki, and at that same time, get ourselves prepared to matriculate into stellar society and get our focus outward. Maybe I better quit here and see if I'm anywhere on the track that you want me to be on.
Well, a couple of questions I want to ask you right quick. First off, the Anunnaki, those are the human-looking aliens, right?
You betcha. All of the records that we have, there's probably 2 million pieces of information in artifact and carvings, pictures, clay tablets, sculptures, all kinds of things. They were definitely humanoid like we are, or we're like them. We're half them at this particular point, so there's even closer. We're a combination of Homo erectus and Anunnaki genes. And that's why, for instance, we have all the anomalous stuff going for us genetically that we do. We have a page-long variety we have a chin, we have a high forehead, we have sweat glands and skin that's like nothing else on the planet. Our human females don't have an estrous cycle. But looking at the genetic code itself, we've got 4,000 and plus counting genetic defects that we've already identified in our gene code, whereas most animals and most species on this planet only have have two or four or none. Yes, to answer your question directly, Joe, the males were bearded, heavy set. They were taller and huskier than we are generally now, and the females were definitely females, and like Inanna, who is one of them, who was one of the 12 in the upper echelons here, who demanded, for instance, that she be put in charge of one of the new installations. So when they dug up Mohenjo-daro in northern part of India not too long ago, probably maybe 30 years ago now, I believe that it was her original palace. It was a huge complex with pools, gardens, and so on. And one of the most fascinating things about it was that the stone walls were about 30 feet thick at the bottom, but they discovered when they did the archaeological excavations that the face of those stones, in one long wall at least, was glazed into glass a foot thick. Would take a tremendous powerful a beam ray of some sort or extremely high powered laser to do that. And it's very interesting that when you go into the ancient records in the Vedas, they talk just about the gods having a big dispute among themselves, and some of them are off in a spaceship and turn around and fire this laser back there. So that's why the most ancient deity in Indian religion and philosophy is a female. And that's why the Indian culture is structured the way it is, whereas Enlil, Jehovah Yahweh, was the chief in charge of the Hebrews, and a male chauvinist, and women were treated like chattel. And to the extent as Marilyn Stone in When God Was a Woman, that excellent book that she wrote, mentions the fact that in those ancient times, if Inanna's women in India happened to travel over into the Middle East, into the Hebrew area, because they naturally expected to be independent and respected, they often were killed. human, very human, and look like us, or we look like them.
Well, the reason I was asking is, the organization I work with ICAR, basically, we do a lot of ancient history study, and we actually just got through reviewing the Sumerians for about the fourth time and the Dogon. And the reason we've been doing both of them is the Sumerians talk about a specific race. And when you get into Ike and a few other things, they're talking about a specific race. They're talking about the Anunnaki, which is the human race. The Dogon and the Egyptians are talking about a reptilian race, which is an entirely different race. Now, you do find in later Sumerian texts that these reptilians come into play. So it's an interesting thing to watch all of this unfold when you actually start from the source and read forward. One of the things that actually convinced me about what the Sumerians were saying was true is there's a religious tablet we were reading, and it discusses when the Anunnaki first came to live on this planet. And it discusses these big white domes that actually were on here. It actually built to live in. And they actually got into it in a very, very, very in-depth way. I mean, granted, this is religious tablets we're talking about, so you have to take it with a grain of salt. But, I mean, a lot of our history comes from religious texts, unfortunately. But it is in there, and it's written, and they discuss these different types of aliens. They even discuss what they're doing in quite a bit of detail, which is kind of interesting because you're saying not quite the same thing, but along the same lines. And all of this, I know all of this ties into a very interesting program, but it was one of the things I was asking at the beginning of tonight's show is, why did they come to Earth now? We're suggesting that they came to Earth prior to man, aren't we?
The original contact, before I answer that question, could you tell me what that religious text was that you were looking at?
I'd actually have to look it up. I couldn't tell you right offhand, but I can get it for you.
Is it Book of Enoch?
But I can know it was in, it was from a professor, I believe at either it was Harvard or Yale University. He had posted a study he had done to the internet, and it was actually the study.